Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson. In this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Anna Vital, an infographic designer who's worked with companies like Google, LegalZoom, Cisco, the World Bank, and more. Anna is also the founder of Adioma, her infographic maker in use by over 13,000 people. Anna, originally from the Ukraine, moved to the U.S. for a year abroad during high school and came back to finish up her college career, then moved to the San Francisco Bay Area for law school. And it was during her studies and law school at UC Hastings that she started getting into infographics. First, as a way to visually help herself understand the course material better, a solution to her own problem. And then she started creating infographics to generate interest for startup events she was organizing with friends during her series called Funders and Founders. And that's when things really started to take off for Anna. Her infographic series chronicling the founder journeys of entrepreneurs like Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and Jeff Bezos went super viral and got millions of views. She started fielding tons of inbound requests for infographic work, and the rest is history. In this episode, Anna and I are talking about how she built Adioma as a side project to her design consulting work, originally as nothing more than a solution to her own problem of needing to make infographics quicker. And then how she got more than 40,000 visitors to her site the week she launched. We hear about Anna's own personal design process, how she systematically creates infographics that go viral, and how anyone can implement infographics into their content marketing process. We're digging into how Anna's built a powerful personal brand, her tactics for growing an engaged audience, advice for building side projects, and much more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Anna Vital. Anna, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you here. And the first question I've got for you, I've been asking to everyone I've had on the show. I'd be curious to hear, what book are you reading right now, or what's been your favorite recently?
Okay, I just finished recently the biography of Chairman Mao by his personal physician, Li Jisui. And that was really interesting. I want to visualize it.
Wow. Yeah, I bet he is a very fascinating character.
Completely, yeah. I was so surprised by what I read. But I mean, that's how I started doing infographics, sort of.
Ah, okay. Well, I want to dig into that. So, you know, going a little bit further back towards the beginning, Anna, where are you originally from?
Yeah, I was born in Ukraine. And then when I was 15, I went to high school in the U.S. in Utah.
Oh, wow. Was that your decision? Was it your family? What led to that? That's a big
move. It was one of those things, like I really wanted to go and was just looking for an opportunity to. And you know, one day randomly reading a newspaper, I saw there's this exchange program. So I just signed up for it.
Wow. That's awesome. And where in Utah? What's it?
I was in Sandy, which is in a suburb of Salt Lake City. And I went to Alta High School. Home of the Hawks.
Is that where you finished like your high school career? Did you stay for a year and then go back home?
Yeah, I stayed for a year and then went back, and then I decided I'd go to BYU, Brigham Young University, which is in Provo, also in Utah. And then, yeah, that's where I ended up for college afterwards.
That's awesome. And after college, did you then make your way to the Bay Area?
Yes. So I studied linguistics, and that's where I learned Chinese, still at BYU. And then I went to San Francisco for law school. And so I did my law school there at UC Hastings, which is right in the city.
That's great. You're a professional student.
Yeah, it's wild.
So Anna, you know, I remember first coming across your work back when you were running the blog, Funders and Founders. And, you know, everyone who's listening already knows you're an infographic designer primarily by trade, or at least that's what you got your start with. So At what point in time did you start getting into design work?
Yeah, so it started, I didn't know that I'd be a designer, right, going to even up to all the way up to college. And then in law school, I just kind of naturally started diagramming the cases to help me remember what I was reading. And and then from there, I just kind of got into a habit of diagramming things. And then after law school, even before I finished, I thought, well, what am I going to do? You know, what do I want to be a lawyer? Actually, am I going to practice? And then I thought, I want to see what the startup world is about, because I was in San Francisco and a lot of my friends were in the startup world. So so I decided to kind of diagram for myself what that life path would be like, and even to explain to myself what is a startup, because it's not necessarily always clear what a startup company works like and what a startup life or the life of a startup founder looks like. So I did that, and when I decided that I was going to do a startup, I showed it to my parents because they asked me, what's a startup? Told them that I wasn't really going to do the lawyer track anymore and that I was going to try a startup. And so I showed them my first infographic, my proto infographic of what a startup is like.
I love that.
Yeah. They had their questions still, but then even during law school, I started doing events for startup founders, because a lot of people, and myself included, were looking for investors at the time and still are. Kind of events where you invite investors and introduce them to the founders were helpful. So I started doing more of those, and then to explain to people the process of funding and how startups work, I started doing infographics. But again, I wasn't thinking about it as a career, or I was just in like a side thing, like a hobby really that I was doing to help me explain the events that we were doing. And then when we saw how well the infographics worked to help bring the audience to the events, I thought, wait a minute, maybe I'm not the only one who thinks visually like the way I do. You know, something that I discovered in law school, that when I read, I have these images, really vivid images in my head that are more powerful than the words I'm reading. And so that's how I remember things.
I love that. And I think it's cool that this was sort of born out of a way to teach yourself better too.
Exactly. It was completely a necessity for me. But then I realized there are other people like that out there who process information visually. And I wished right away that education was more visual, that there were more visuals, not just in law school, but earlier on in my education. I think that would have made a huge difference. But it's not too late, even now.
It's never too late. So, Anna, pretty quickly after you start have some, you know, success with dropping infographics out there, you land some client work too. And since then, you've worked with companies like Google, Cisco, the World Bank. Do you remember the first paid project that you landed creating infographics?
Yes, I do. And the reason I remember is because I didn't look for it. We were just doing infographics again to bring an audience to the events. And then people started emailing us asking, well, can you do infographics for us? And at first we thought no, because, you know, we're not really infographics designers. We're just doing it for our own purposes. But yeah, then a client knocked on our door. I think it was one of the first ones was LegalZoom, and they wanted to describe a product they were launching. It was a legal product, and I thought, oh, I can definitely do this. You know, I understand how that works, and that was the first. And then not long after, we got other people like Cisco and World Bank knocked on our door. They published a 400-page book about whether entrepreneurship is a learnable skill. And I thought, oh, I love that topic. They had they'd done research all over the world to see if people who are not born in entrepreneurial families could actually be taught to be entrepreneurs. So we visualized that book as a four-page infographic. And then we had Google work with us. And just recently we did my favorite project of all, which is a visualization of types of visualizations. That's meta. So
very meta.
Yeah. So eventually we were able to, do this. So now with Google, and with other clients now that we take, which is not often these days because we're doing Adioma, but we are, coming up even with the concept of the project. So we can basically do what is best for the client, come up with a concept and execute it completely. So
yeah,
so that's the artist's dream, to work like that.
I love that. And we've got a lot of content marketers in particular listening to this episode today. So, for that group of people, or maybe just anyone who's considering infographics as a part of their content strategy, do you have any sort of like case studies that come to mind in terms of, the amount of traffic infographics have brought in, or how many shares they've generated? Anything that sort of jumps out as what people can expect from a great infographic if they can, get it promoted the right way?
Yeah, I do, because we have come to what we do through a lot of experimentation. In other words, in the beginning, we were just doing anything that sounded good to us, any topic that sounded interesting to us, any format, visual format that we thought was cool, we would just do, and then see what the results are, measure the traffic and measure the conversion. And one of the things that clearly stood out was that doing a series of infographics, so infographics that are somehow logically connected to each other, is better for traffic than doing standalone infographics. So that they're not connected to each other. That's number one. And such series would be, we've done two, How Startup Founders Started, which is their biographies visualized, and then How Startups Started. So things like how Airbnb started, how Instagram started, detailing the founding story. So the reason for that seems to be that when people find one and they see that there are other infographics in this series, they tend to read the whole series. So that way they spend more time on your website, they interact with you more, they realize that there's going to be more of this this type of infographic coming, that you're likely going to continue this series, and they become your subscribers. They're more likely to subscribe to the newsletter. And in general, to trust the kind of thing that you're doing because they see you've done it more than once. And the other thing that jumped out at me is the sources, so the reference material that we use to base the infographics on. So when we used the actual books, published books from authoritative figures, like in the case of How Elon Musk Started, the infographic is based on biography, his authorized biography by Ashley Vance. And that's, we read that biography and, Vance actually goes and has a lot of meetings with Musk. And so this biography is mostly in Elon Musk's words, but it's still a critical biography because Vance takes, a look at his life as a whole and interviews other people and then compares and contrasts the things that he learns from Musk with what he has heard from other people. So you get this more objective look at your subject. And so the people reading this infographic that was based on this book and other sources, they seem to have a lot more to say. And we even had the neighbor who lived next door to Elon Musk in South Africa comment on this infographic in the comment section, I think. And he said something about his father, you know, that he was really harsh and, you know, had his own take on it. So so the insight is that when we base our infographics on really serious, credible, verified sources, we get a lot more participation and interest.
I love that. Yep. I think that's a really great point that, you know, the source material, the research that you put into it is kind of everything because it fuels the journey that your infographic goes on. So, you know, exactly. And actually this series that you're talking about here with the founder journeys is probably my favorite that I've seen you guys do. I love it. So when you're looking at this process, maybe to zoom out just a little bit. So obviously, you know, the upfront research is super important, making sure that you have the story right, the journey sort of mapped out. But what comes next? Do you sort of like, you know, outline it in bullet point form the way you want to go? Or do you sort of like visually sketch out what you think the infographic looks like? How do you recommend people sort of go from, you know, idea and research to turning it into an infographic?
Sure. Yeah. So, so there is a framework that we follow now. And that's what we've kind of arrived at after years of doing this. When we sit down and do an infographic, we have to be of two minds. Two minds meaning systematic on one side, more like the left brain, and then creative on the right side, more like the right brain. I mean, more spontaneous and creative at the same time, which is what the challenge is in doing this work. Because on one side, on one hand, you are processing facts and you have to verify them, you have to put them on a timeline, resolve conflicts between sources. But on the other hand, you have to see from the very beginning how all of this will fit together into, you know, a finished infographic. And so so the first thing we do is arrange all the facts. So first of all, figure out what the facts are, right? Read the material, take out all the facts, just like you said, make a list. Put this list into a spreadsheet and create a spreadsheet that contains images already in the spreadsheet. This is really important because otherwise you're back to a textual document that doesn't really look like the beginning of an infographic. So you have to have images to see what you're going to tie these facts visually to. This is important, especially if you're a visual person, which a lot of people are. So we create this spreadsheet, and then already when we're looking at the facts, we are thinking about what visual template we're going to use. How are these facts related to each other? That's question number two. After what are the facts, question number two is how are they related to each other? Is it a sequence, for example? Did one thing happen first and then there was something next? And is this order predefined? If it's predefined, then it's going to be a timeline or some sort of a sequential template, most likely a timeline. If it's something that happens in a cycle, you know, it's going to be a cyclical timeline. If it's something that has a hierarchy, it's going to be a tree template. So some nodes are going to be on top of other nodes. When we think of this template in the abstract, we kind of pare down the limitless visual template choices to a pretty limited set of templates. So the assumption here being that even though there are endless visual ways in theory to visualize any information, only some small part of those visual templates actually make sense for your particular type of information. And that's quite a realization, actually. Once we realize that, then we realize we have a system. So now we just run our facts through the system and we get an answer to the question of how to visualize this pretty fast. So once we've decided on the visual template, so we know what structure these facts have and how it's going to be reflected in the infographic, then we think about styling and whether we're going to add illustration. And that's about it. Those are the big decisions.
Wow. I'm taking notes over here on my end. And I just want to tell everyone, you know, listening today that, Anna, you actually have an entire course dedicated to this topic. So, I believe the best URL for that would be learn.adioma.com. And we'll include the link to that too in the show notes. Is that fair?
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. After all this trial, I thought, okay, so we can probably share this system that we've come up with. The way I explain it in the course is we're showing you the road you take from your idea, your infographic idea, or even if you don't have an idea, how to choose the right topic. And there's a system to that. And then how to take this idea through this system and then arrive at a final infographic that's going to bring you traffic. And traffic is very important, and it's a measurable result. I mean, this is what fuels your business and your inspiration. And the more leaders you have, the more inspired you're going to have to, you're going to be to keep creating. So I always, when starting out, sometimes we don't really think about the outcome, because we're just focused on the process, but the outcome is also important. You want to kind of plan for how many readers you want to have and who those readers are going to be. And all of that can be planned in the very beginning of the infographic creation process when you choose your audience by choosing your topic and how you're going to talk about it.
I love how systematic you are with this. This is great. So, you know, this kind of leads us to what you're doing today. So your current company, Adioma, A-D-I-O-M-A. Can you tell us about what the product is and maybe who it's for?
Sure. So it's an infographic maker that makes infographics. It's for non-designers. We have a lot of templates that you just plug in your text into, and out comes an infographic. So we really made the first version of it for ourselves, because we got into this situation where we've already made a lot of infographics and had a lot of assets, visual assets like icons and illustrations and templates, all sitting in our hard drive. And, whenever a new infographic comes in or we want to make a new one, we would just pull these resources one by one from the file system. And then one day we thought, why are we doing all of this over and over again if we could just put it all together into one system and then search these assets quickly and insert them into the infographic almost immediately? And we thought, is that possible? Yeah, it's possible. We can probably make a kind of engine that pulls everything together, and where you search, you know, just like you'd search in your file system, but it will insert the system will insert all the icons and illustrations into the infographic right away, rather than opening your Photoshop or some other infographic editor, which we've tried, and then trying to, you know, put together all of these things. So that's what we made. And that was Adioma, the prototype. It had a lot of icons that we've used before, illustrations and the templates. And so the icons would go into templates, and the text would go automatically into the template without us having to reformat it. And so our speed of creating infographics, it really increased a lot. Now we were able to put out, you know, 6-7 times more than we did before. We spent a lot less time searching for the icons. It's funny, but in OS X on the Mac, it's not so easy to find the right graphic file when you're looking for it. But here we had a search, a textual search that would look for icons. And then we realized that actually you don't even have to look for icons. All you have to do is just type the text that you need to type, and then the icon could pop up by itself, because you can teach the search to recognize, the meaning of the word that you type from context, and then it would insert the icon by itself. So that's how Adioma works now. You just type your text, and then it matches up the icons for you, and it puts them into a visual template like a timeline, a tree. There's lots of diagrams in there.
That's genius. And, you know, as a content marketer who is primarily a writer, I can really identify with this pain point because I can edit things and poke around a little bit on Adobe Illustrator, Adobe Photoshop. But, you know, when it comes to actually creating something brand new like this, it's a totally overwhelming prospect. So I am a huge advocate of tools like Adioma. So I love this. You know, Anna, was Adioma started as a side project when you were, you know, taking on mostly consulting work, or did you sort of halt the consulting projects to shift focus over to Adioma full time?
So we actually used Adioma to do our client work. I remember one time we had a really cool project. So this was the life of a famous organ transplant medicine pioneer who passed away. And his family and his colleagues, they brought us two really thick scrapbooks about his life and what he did and how he worked on his main invention, which was this test for figuring out if you can be a donor, an organ donor to someone else. So blood matching, blood type matching kind of test. And so we went through these scrapbooks and compiled all the facts on his life. And then it ended up being, I think, around 150 points. He lived a really long life. His name is Paul Terasaki, and he really is well known in his field. So there was a lot of facts to deal with. And we thought, okay, maybe we can configure our system over here to match all these facts with icons and to lay out all these facts on a timeline automatically. Because 150 points, you know, arranging those in Photoshop takes a long time, even for us, even though we worked in Photoshop for a while. So that's what we did. We used our system to lay out the initial prototype of the timeline of his life lifetime and sent it out as the first draft. And the client really liked it. And we thought, oh, now we have a tool to kind of quickly give people a preview of what the final infographic will look like. And you know, it was easy to cut out some of the facts, and they were able to tell us what we should prioritize. So I was really happy with how quickly now we could send previews for our project.
That's awesome. I love that. So Anna, you've got this tool built internally, basically for your own use at first. When did you guys sort of, I remember it going live on Product Hunt, right? So that day, I think you got somewhere around like 1,200 upvotes, which is a lot for Product Hunt. Was that sort of your first public launch of the tool?
Yeah, but it was funny because it wasn't planned at all. In other words, so we built the tool and the tool was working. However, it did not have a landing page at all. So when you landed on adioma.com, you saw the interface, like you saw the infographic editor and no explanation, nothing else. So, but when that was done, you know, I thought, oh, I could let my friends know, or people who follow us, so they could maybe try it out. And so I posted on Facebook, you know, I've been working on something for a few months now. Can you guys try it out? And then, and that was on a Friday, and I thought, you know, surely we're just going to get a handful of people who are going to test it for us, and that'll be great. But then my friend, he, you know, in a couple hours from since I posted, he said, "Have you? Congratulations, you're on Product Hunt." And I thought, wait, we're not on Product Hunt. I didn't submit it. Turned out someone else submitted us, and we got some upvotes already. And I thought, oh my goodness, it's like being caught, you know, I don't know, with your clothes off, because we have no landing. It's like, you know, we didn't even introduce ourselves properly. But anyway, you know, so we got comments, you know, where's your guys' landing page? What is this product? And some users started saying, oh, I like that there is no landing page because I was able to try it out right away. So we launched in Product Hunt.
Wow. Okay, so that day that it unexpectedly went up, or maybe the series of days after that, do you remember how many people came to your website and checked out the tool?
I think it must have been like 40,000 or so.
Wow, that's insane. And did you do anything, you know, after you realized it went up? Did you guys try and scramble to put together like a landing page, a lead generation form, or anything like that to get signups?
We started scrambling to fix the bugs, actually, because we had some really major ones. Again, we weren't meant to be launching. So we started fixing the bugs, first of all, so that the people who did already start using our tool, you know, actually could create something on it. And so that was number one priority. And number two, then we did put together a landing page, I think, a few days later. And did let other people know that, yeah, we're on Product Hunt now. Basically just tweeting and Facebooking about it.
Wow, that's awesome. So, you know, fast forwarding to today, if you're comfortable talking about it, how many users do you guys have now as like a ballpark figure?
You know, it's a mixed bag because... We used to have a free trial and we have some free users still from those times. And now we have only paid users. So, and I don't have these numbers separated in my head because some of those free users are becoming paid and it's like a fluid process. I wish I could give you a ballpark number. Maybe I can email you afterwards. I want to look it up myself.
Sure. Yeah. We'll include that in the show notes. Definitely. So, Anna, I want to transition over to a few of my frequently asked questions, and I've designed them to be intentionally short on my end. Your answers do not need to be equally as so.
Okay.
What would be your number one piece of advice to someone listening today who wants to start working on a side project?
I would say don't worry about getting all the advice that you can get. Because I feel like for me, I read too many blogs and, you know, got a lot of advice about how I should do something. But at the end of the day, I feel like it's your passion, your personality that drives what you're going to do. And if some of that advice conflicts with what is important to you, then you're going to not... be able to use all that passion to drive your project forward. So for example, one such advice, for startups that I got is that don't worry about how your product looks, just make sure it functions. But for us, you know, we're a graphic, design infographic, tool. So it totally, makes sense to make it look as beautiful as possible. And for me, you know, beautiful things, beauty drives me. That's what I love. I love looking at something that's beautiful and I love making beautiful things. So even though for many other startups, it might be totally okay to do things that are not, you know, super designy and launch like that, for us, making beautiful things makes sense. And that's what drives us, drives me personally. So I would say just, be careful with the advice you get and just really listen to what you want to do and what you need to do.
That's great advice. So Anna, now this next question can sort of be related to any of the projects or businesses or work that you've done over the past, you know, 5 to 10 years or so, but have you had any particular strategies, tactics, or ideas that come to mind, things you've tested that ended up being a failure in some way?
Yes, I do. So one of the less intuitive ones for me was when we launched, I wanted to make a free product. I wanted as many people in the world as possible to create an infographic for free. But so our advisor, he said, you know, yeah, you can try that, but you know, I recommend that you do a paid product. And I thought, no, we don't want to limit the number of people who try this. But what happened, what I didn't expect, is that when we got a lot of free users, the ones who got it for free, who didn't sign up for a paid subscription, they almost never used it, or they used it just a little bit and didn't really, you know, put a lot of effort into creating an infographic. And I thought, that's completely counterintuitive. Why is it that when someone doesn't pay, they don't create? Because they could create, it's free, right? And so now that we run a lot more tests with free versus paid, and we see this correlation again and again, that when people pay for something, they tend to use it a lot more than when they don't. So that's something that I didn't expect.
That can be a tough lesson to learn.
Yeah.
So Anna, this is going to be my last question for you. What would you say has been the best investment you've ever made in the context of growing your business? So this could be in the form of, you know, time, money, education, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
Best investment. The best investment of time was, I think, to create the course, because before the course, we had people creating the infographics, and they would often ask for advice, not beyond, you know, just creating infographics, but how to promote them, how to get more traffic with them, how to create them the right way, how to embed them in their website so that people click on them, how to make them interactive, and so on. And until we made the course, I would just deal with those questions on an ad hoc basis. I would write articles or answer them right in our customer service chat. But once we created the course, we kind of put all those questions together and painted this journey for our customers, how you go from an idea to actual publication, and then how then you get the results from your infographic, how you measure your traffic numbers and your audience engagement and then your conversion. So now it's one continuous process that you can follow and perfect, not just with one infographic, but you can measure and see how what you change in your infographic making and publishing changes the results you get. So that was the best investment of time. It took a long time to make the course, but once we made it, we realized now we have not just a tool, but a framework, a thought framework around it, how to use it to get the result you want. And most of the customers of ours, the result that they want is to increase their audience, to have more people read what they have to say.
For everyone listening today, that is hands down the best reason to go out and create an online course. I mean, Anna, you were basically answering the most, you know, the most common questions that your users already had for you, and you were creating a resource that can live on, you know, for years and years to come. I love that.
Exactly. Yeah. And we give this course free with an annual subscription because it's, you know, infographic making, it is something that you perfect over time. We did not succeed right away, but when you put a lot of effort into it, and a lot meaning about a year, you're going to see results. So that's how it happened to us, and I'm sure it can happen to anyone who is willing to put in the work.
Beautiful. Well, Anna, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you, Adioma, and everything you guys are up to?
Sure. It's adioma.com. And we have a blog, blog.adioma.com, where we show the infographics that you can make and talk about how you can make them. You can see a lot of examples and play around with them. So, yeah, about me personally, I have a funny URL, anna.vc. And that's where I talk about my work for clients and for Adioma and about information design in general.
Awesome. Well, Anna, thank you so much for joining us.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of The Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.